Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Doug Keller on behalf of Mr. Massa. Since Mr. Massa filed his reply brief, I think this case has become substantially less complicated, and that's because of this Court's recent decision in United States v. Galan. In Galan, this Court agreed with a contention that Mr. Massa had been making in his briefing in this case, that a district court reversibly errs when it makes a total loss of termination without segregating out loss that occurred before the defendant's conduct. Here, there's no dispute that the district court failed to segregate out this pre-conduct loss.
So this is the case filed November 4th, 2015, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
And it's a three-judge panel that basically says because it didn't de-aggregate that they vacated and remanded for the court to do that?
That's right, Your Honor.
But that was just disaggregating initial abuse from the trafficking in the images. And I understand from your briefs you're trying to draw the line at a different spot, and Paroline seems to be contrary to that. Paroline says you look at the general, you have to disaggregate. It doesn't say that, but I think Alon correctly interpreted it as saying you have to disaggregate between the initial abuse and the trafficking in images. And then it said the trafficking in images, all of the losses associated with that are general losses. And then the district court's obligation is to determine an individual defendant's appropriate portion of the general losses, using that term, general losses. So I didn't see, so Paroline seems to be contrary to your argument that you have to look only at general losses after the date that the defendant first trafficked in the images. I didn't see that at all in Paroline.
Well, at the end of the day, what Paroline's attempting to do is to figure out what portion of the total loss could approximately be caused by the defendant's conduct.
But it's not. It says in this, I mean, that's what the Ninth Circuit precedent said before Paroline. So under Paroline, the court says, in this special context, we use a different approach. And the approach is that you look at all of the general losses, sort of like I'm an old environmental lawyer, so I understand CERCLA liability. You look at all of the losses, the whole pool of contaminated stuff, and then the district court uses some basis for apportioning it among all of the perpetrators. And then the Supreme Court gives a list of what those factors, rough factors might be, but says the district court can do it.
But, Your Honor, I think at the end of the day, the touchstone under Paroline is what loss the defendant could approximately cause. So
That's not what the court says, though. I mean, that's the reason the district court threw up its hands, probably. It says, in this special circumstance, in this special context, and it gives a different test. It's impossible to trace a particular amount of those losses to the individual defendant. So the district court should order restitution in an amount that comports with the defendant's relative role in the causal processes that underlies the victim's general loss. And it rejects the proximate cause analysis that the Ninth Circuit had previously adopted.
It did, but it still ultimately it agreed that a proximate cause analysis applied.
But in this special context, it's some sort of apportionment formula.
Right, and I think at the end of the day, when you're trying to determine the defendant's causal role in the process, it doesn't make sense to include loss that he couldn't have possibly caused because it occurred before he was ever involved.
But it's not, this is, I don't know if Paroline really even helped very much because it's just, this is really almost an impossible process, but it says it can be done. But here, you've got 8,000 for some, the victims that had many more images, and then SpongeBob was only 1,000. So that would indicate to me on some level that the district court and SpongeBob, am I saying that right?
I think it's
still
Sponge
in the case.
B.
Sponge, yeah. Well, but that was 1,000. And there were far less, Sponge B, I'm sorry. But with the defendants had been found to possess images of Andy Sponge B. Four had been ordered to pay restitution in the amounts ranging from 1,000 to 1,200, and Massa possessed two images of Andy Sponge B. And then, but regarding Amy, there were 73 images. So regarding Cindy, there were 91. And regarding Angela, there were 85. So clearly Sponge B was 1,000, the others were 8,000. So there is some apportionment that's going on there.
There is some.
I don't know how you could get an exact number. Paroline says it can be done and gives some guidelines. And there are certain things that the court does. The court goes through and says how many images, what each of the victims alleges to be their damages, how much they've collected. And the best is maybe, I don't know, I can't tell the 8,000 what's different between the 8,000, but clearly just on its face, there's a lot less images of Sponge B.
That's right, Aaron. I'd sort of like jump, I think, to the first issue, the lack of explanation issue. I think the problem is we have a series of foundational factual findings, and then we have this 8,000 number, and we don't have the court's reasoning for how those foundational factual findings led it to the bottom.
There is a little bit there. It says, what was the overall loss? You know, what did the people allege that their damages were and how much they had collected? So there is something that goes on. It just doesn't seem that there can ever be a perfect, this is not ever going to be easy, but Paroline says it can be done.
Sure, but at the end of the day, we need to know what the district court thought was important, what he didn't think was important, what he weighed. And
he identified the factors he's required by Paroline to identify. What he doesn't do is try to construct a formula, but Paroline doesn't require a formula. You can say we don't know what he considered important. I thought he identified what he considered important.
Well, a few things, Your Honor. He identified these facts that he thought were important, but then didn't sort of provide why he thought this factor was important as opposed to this factor. He obviously considered the number of images to be quite important, but at the same time, he didn't address the fact that there were duplicate images. And if I could take sort of
It's not unlike an award for emotional distress. Things are argued to the jury, and somehow the jury comes back with a response. It's been termed a holistic approach. And I'm not sure that anybody's capable of doing anything more than that with this particular question. So.
Well, I guess I disagree. And we provided some examples in our brief of district courts who had sort of provided, I think, that missing middle step that I think the district court needed to do here. But I think at the end of the day, certainly one of the most important things to consider is the total loss. And so setting aside whether the district court erred in determining that total loss, he found a total loss for one of the victims who he awarded $8,000. He found a total loss of $300,000. For another victim, he found $9 million in total loss. It's inexplicable how you could award $8,000 in restitution to those two victims who are not similarly situated. Obviously, different victims are going to be harmed in different ways from this conduct.
What if he thinks the images is the most important thing? Because the images are similar as to those three that he goes with $8,000.
Well,
number of images. Well, whereas Sponge B is only two.
Well, two things. One, I think the images is, I think, not a super helpful factor here because of the duplicates. But setting that aside, at the end of the day, if we're attempting in some very rough, reasonable way.
If you were the judge, but, if there were, 85 seems worse than two or whatever.
Sure, but at the end of the day, if we're attempting to determine my client's the loss he proximately caused, even sort of in a rough way, it doesn't make sense to me that if one victim was harmed, $300,000 worth, based on this pool of potential viewers, and someone else was harmed really $9 million, how my client could have possibly caused the same amount of loss. If you just look at Angela, for instance, she's the one who had a total loss determination of $300,000. The district court also found that...
Did you come up with some numbers that were like dollars and cents that were...
What we ended up doing is following the Sixth Circuit approach and taking the total loss figure and dividing it by 1,000.
Well, how's that better judgment than...
So, for instance, with Angela, for instance, her total loss figure was $300,000. The district court also found that 500 defendants had been found to possess her images. I think sort of a rough way to do this would be say, look, $300,000 divided by 500 defendants means each defendant had to pay about $600 towards that loss. Now, you might say my client's role is more aggravated or less aggravated, but I don't see how you can get from $600 to $8,000 based on this record. And the court has no further questions. I see my time is up.
You can save your 10 seconds.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Helen Hong on behalf of the United States. The District Court did not abuse its discretion by following the mandates that the Supreme Court had set out in Paroline, which is to approximate the damages that Mr. Massa caused to the victims that were depicted in the child pornography that he possessed.
Tell me what the $8,000 for each victim is based on.
Your Honor, the District Court identified the inputs it considered.
I understand. It went through the factors and said, here are all the factors, $8,000. So just tell me what the line is from the factors for each of the victims and the $8,000. How was that determined?
Your Honor, the District Court determined that $8,000 represented the defendant's role in the causal process underlying the victim's general losses.
Paroline says you have to, the District Courts know how to do this, and they should determine an amount that comports with the defendant's relative role. So the District Court didn't explain, based on the inputs, why $8,000 comported with the defendant's relative role. So what is the explanation? Can you provide that?
Your Honor, it's implicit in the factors that the District Court had identified. And as Your Honors had recognized, the District Court obviously did weigh the number of images.
Can you give me for each one how the factors that the District Court looked at resulted in an $8,000
determination? Your Honor, I think, for example, if you look at the award that was awarded to Andy, the SpongeBee victim, the court awarded $1,000 based on the fact that the defendant had what the court called an insignificant number of images.
Okay, so now do it with Angela, Cindy, and Amy Misty.
And the District Court identified the number of images that the defendant possessed to be different here.
So do you think he was saying per the number? So your view is that the District Court said it's $100 per image?
No, Your Honor. There was no identification of an amount per image.
And even then, wouldn't it differ amongst the victims? Because even though it was a small number, 85, 91, 73, it was a different number.
They were different numbers, Your Honor, but looking at the District Court in its discretion looked at the totality of circumstances and determined what the defendant's relative role was.
So you can't
explain. How do you get 8,000?
Yeah,
there's no way to get that. You can't even come up with any way that you get an 8,000 number.
And that's where the Supreme Court's guidance is relevant here. In Paroline, the court said there's no mathematical formula, there's no algorithm, there's no equation that's required, particularly when you look at the juxtaposition of the majority opinion in Paroline and compare to what Justice Roberts was suggesting in his dissent, you can see that what the District Court did here is precisely what the Supreme Court majority envisioned. What Justice Roberts said in his dissent was, any number is going to seem arbitrary if you don't have a mathematical formula, and what the majority has told us and what this proximate causation requirements require is that no mathematical formula is going to get us there.
So getting back to my environmental law background, mm-hmm. I mean, when you have a Superfund site, you have multiple perpetrators, and the District Court says, well, I'll look at how nasty was the stuff you released. How long were you dumping at that site? What was the quantity of what you released? And then they come up with something. Here, that's what the Supreme Court seems to be saying. Look at these factors and then come up with some way to fairly apportion the correct amount. $8,000 just for each victim sounds more like the penalty. They just said it's easy, a rule of thumb, I'll just do $8,000 per victim.
And
how can we get around that? That's not what the Supreme Court told the District Courts to do.
Had the District Court simply said that $8,000 was reasonable, as the defendant in the District Court, as the District Court had done in Kennedy, for example, then I agree that that there would be a problem here under Paroline. But what the District Court did here was tether the amount to its discretionary estimation.
He stated the factors, and then he just said $8,000. So he didn't tether it. He went through the factors, but then didn't have any tether between the factors and the amount.
He ultimately tethered it to the test that Paroline requires, which is this an amount that comports with the defendant's relative role in the causal process that underlies the victim's general losses?
The rule that we should adopt would be, so long as the District Court says those words, it can pull any number out of the air.
No, Your Honor, but I don't think that that's what happened here, and you can see that from the difference in the awards that were provided for the restitution for Sponge B and Angela, Cindy, and Amy. The number of images that Angela, Cindy, and Amy, that the defendant possessed of Angela, Cindy, and Amy were approximately the same, what he called the significant number. The number that Sponge B was depicted in was just two.
Wouldn't it have been better if he had said something like, okay, Angela had more images, and Angela also had to maybe, she had to do more counseling, so it affected her worse than someone else. And then we look, okay, and then Sponge B, oh, there were less, and he didn't have to do as much counseling, or and looking at how much had been collected. So then maybe $8,000 for her and $1,000 for Sponge B. But then you go look at Amy, and okay, the images are similar, but the other numbers aren't similar. So, I mean, maybe if he had said $7,000 for one and $6,000 for another or something, that it just, it looks like there was an $8,000 on a bullseye and was throwing, okay, I hit $8,000 there.
And when you look and read the victim impact statements from Angela, Cindy, and Amy, however, the harm that each of them experienced is quite similar. And the district court obviously read through all of these sealed materials. He read through five different supplemental filings.
But their requested total losses, because this is supposed to be an apportionment of loss, the number of defendants who had already been past criminal defendants, the amount of restitution they had already received was totally different.
That's true, Your Honor.
So Amy Misty was, the district court said over $8 million, and 192 defendants were ordered to pay $13 million total. So doesn't that mean that there should be no apportionment to the defendant since the victim has no right to double recovery and it's over the total? I mean, there is no analysis at all of these factors.
Well, the district court identified the inputs, and then ultimately, using its estimation as Paroline required and its judgment and discretion as Paroline required, determined that there were varying amounts that should be awarded to the four different victims that were depicted in the images. And I think perhaps the context of the defendant's own submissions weighed in favor of the district court, really adhering to intellectual honesty here. I mean, courts can sort of paper over the explanation requirement by picking a number like 1,000 as a divisor, but there's really no rational or reasoned basis for picking 1,000 as a divisor.
Well, does the district court need to, though, another thing, that there were downloads before MASA did it, and then there were downloads after? Does the district court at least need to acknowledge that?
No, Your Honor, I think this goes to Judge Ikuda's point at the beginning, which is that Paroline does not require an aggregation of the harms when it is harms that are related to the ongoing traffic of the victim's images. So as Judge Ikuda alluded to, Paroline discusses the overall phenomenon that caused the general losses. It discusses the victim's general loss that's in the trade in her images. In apportioning the defendant's relative role in that, you would have to consider the full general loss that the defendant suffered as a result of that one phenomenon. What Golan would require is a disaggregation of the injuries or losses associated with the initial abuse from the losses associated with the traffic in her images. Mr. Massa is part of...
A little bit of an unrelated question. Are any of these victims ever actually getting any money?
I don't believe that they're collecting much, Your Honor. My understanding is that there are some defendants. I'm aware of some defendants that have paid their restitution when they have the means to do so. In this case, I don't know if Mr. Massa has the means. Obviously, that's not something considered under 2259. Amy's submission from the attorney suggests that she has not collected anything or much, and Angela's submission suggests that Angela has not collected even from the initial abuser, and that she had not collected from many of the individuals ordered to pay restitution either. And I'll just note that 2259 precludes consideration of awards that were obtained from other sources or insurance in determining the restitution that should be ordered. But the district court here attempted to adhere and did adhere to what Paroline requires.
The district court did not know about Golan. To the extent that Golan requires separation out of the initial abuse injury, do we have a problem here that the district court didn't know that, so didn't try to do that?
Your Honor, the defendant did raise that request below, ER 43 in their motions. They raised that specific aggregation request. On appeal here, however, that aggregation argument was waived. For Angela, there's no aggregation argument that has been raised at all. For Cindy, it was an aggregation related to the time at which Mr. Massa started to possess Cindy's images, which was 2012.
Didn't Galan happen after the briefs?
It did, Your Honor. It did, Your Honor. And so I would agree that if that the district court did not do the disaggregation required in Galan. I'll just note that the disaggregation that's requested by Mr. Massa in his 28J letter is not what Galan requires. And that's precisely the point, Judge Ikuda, that you raised at the beginning, which is a disaggregation of the losses that are associated with the initial abuse from the ongoing losses that are associated with the overall phenomenon or the trade in images. If the district or this panel were to remand, the United States would request that it would be remand consistent with Galan without any qualifiers that Mr. Massa has requested in his 28J letter. I see I have run out of time. Unless the court has any questions, the United States would submit.
Mr. Keller, you can have a whole minute.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple small points. Judge Callahan, in response to your question about whether any of these victims had recovered, I believe in this case the government represented that Amy had recovered $1.7 million from various victims. But I can't seem to find that citation. But I think it's when they offered up how many defendants had been ordered to pay restitution. Regarding the lack of explanation, I think my best sort of authority there is this court's case in Kennedy. I know Kennedy was a pre-Paroline case, and obviously Paroline changed a substantive proximate cause standard. But at the same time, at the end of Kennedy, this court addressed what essentially was a procedural challenge. And Kennedy involved Amy, one of the victims here. And the district court in Kennedy made some preliminary foundational findings like it did here. In that case, it found a total loss figure of Kennedy doesn't say how much, but it was based on the same documentation provided in this case. And then the district court in that case also made a finding about how many defendants had previously possessed images of the victim, and then said $1,000 was, quote, a reasonable figure, without sort of explaining how it got from those foundational findings to its conclusion. And this court said picking this reasonable number simply wasn't sufficient. It needed to sort of explain its reasoning. And that's what I'm asking the district court to do here, and it didn't.
We thank you. We thank both counsel for your helpful arguments. The case argued is submitted.